The National Health Insurance Bill will be signed into law by President Cyril Ramaphosa. In a moment, we'll speak to Professor Letitia Rispel, who's a professor of public health at Wits University, to try and understand how it will actually practically impact on you and me. We'll then reflect on the quarterly labor force survey published by Stats SA yesterday and focus on youth unemployment. We'll speak to Crystal Duncan-Williams, who's a project lead at Youth Capital. And then in about 40 minutes from now, Adam Gilchrist will join us with the Wednesday edition of The Worldview from London. Throughout the hour, though, your calls most welcome on 021-446-0567 and your WhatsApp messages to 072-567-1567.
Good morning, Cape Town, with Africa Milane in for Lester Kivett.
We all have a voice.
Use yours.
Call 021-446-0567.
Join the conversation. On Cape Talk.
It's not only the Democratic Alliance intending to take government to court once the National Health Insurance Bill has signed into law by President Ramaphosa later today, but there are a number of key industry associations for medical schemes, trade union solidarity, South Africa's biggest doctor organization, all poised to launch legal action against the government. I thought on the occasion, on the day of the signing of this bill into law, let's understand one more time what it will actually mean for you and me. And we've invited Professor Letitia Rispel. Letitia is a professor of public health at Wits University. Professor, very good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Africa, and good morning to your listeners.
I think sometimes it's important to quieten the noise around this. Yes, there is a wonderful convenience for the ANC-led government to have President Ramaphosa signing this into law a couple of weeks before the next election. This has been a resolution of the ANC for not only one but two Congresses now. They've been instructed in Parliament to obviously process this and proceed with it. There are concerns around the constitutionality of the legislation and a bigger one around cost, who will be managing the large resources and pool of funds that will be managed under the fund and how that is going to obviously impact on South Africa's health challenges going forward. But what will actually an introduction of this new law mean for you and I, Letitia?
So Africa, perhaps just to take a step back before I answer your question directly. And I know we have limited time, so I'll be really quick. So and I think the first issue is perhaps to just understand what is meant by the term universal health coverage. In essence, there are two elements to that definition. The first one is that you and me should be able to access preventive, curative, and rehabilitation services when we need it. And that's one element. And the second one is that accessing those services shouldn't leave us or give us great financial hardship. And so it's about the ability to access services without suffering financial hardship. So when we look at the South African situation, we have a very inequitable healthcare system where you have that just over 80% of people are dependent on the public health sector. A small proportion of us, people like you and me that are employed, have a private health insurance or medical aid. And so we can access care with relative ease, whereas for the vast majority of people, particularly in the rural areas, it's often very difficult to access specialist services when they really need it. And of course, there are consequences of, you know, of that. But as a whole, South Africa spends, we actually spend quite a lot of money in the health sector. If we look at it in terms of the gross domestic product, in around 8.2%. That was the last count. Half of that money is spent in the private health sector that kind of provides coverage to 17% of the population on average. Now, there are differences between the urban provinces like Gauteng and the Western Cape, where about a quarter of the population are covered by private health insurance or medical aid schemes. So to then come to you, so the National Health Insurance Bill is a financing reform. And I think we kind of mix up issues when it's only one step in a kind of a broader set of reforms that would need to follow. So the World Health Organization defines 6 building blocks of a health system. Finance is only one of them. So when the president signs the bill later today, tomorrow you and I will wake up and nothing would really change. The bill is only a legal instrument to enable us to kind of reform the financing part of the health system, which over time will then make sure that we reach that ability to access services without suffering financial hardship.
I suppose a sentiment shared by Adrian Gore, who is the CEO of Discovery, one of the biggest medical aid schemes and life assurance companies in the country, saying it will take at least another decade before we start seeing practical implications of the application of the National Health Insurance. We do, though, have fundamental questions around the cost to government. This National Health Insurance fund will be, I suppose, and where that money is going to come from. Are you satisfied that government has applied itself sufficiently to those questions?
I government, of course, isn't a monolith. The Department of Health, they still, certainly I know from about a decade ago, because remember, Africa, the green paper, the first green paper was actually published way back in 2011. And there has been some work done, certainly around the costs. Certainly one of the key issues would be around what would be the existing money that's spent in the health sector, particularly that comes from the fiscus, the taxes that you and I pay. So some portion would come from there. Another portion would be from pooling of the fund from contributions, existing contributions for medical aid schemes. But right, there remain some unanswered questions. And obviously there's more work that needs to be done to actually get a very accurate estimate of how much it would cost.
How do you respond to listeners who are raising these kind of concerns? Mervyn saying NHI did not work in England, is not working in the United States. Government can't even pay intern doctors. How do we expect them to manage such a complicated and complex financing model?
No, it's not true. Certainly the United States of America doesn't have a national health insurance system. There are close to 100 million people in the United States that are without cover. And those individuals tend to be poor and they tend to be black. That's the case in the United States. I think in the United Kingdom, they have had a national health service, which is very different from a national health insurance scheme. There's always been a very small private health sector in the United Kingdom. So it's not true. And health reforms are very contextual. So it's not to belittle the concerns of people like Mervyn and others. There are some details, as I said to you already. We all agree that there are a whole lot of details that need to be sorted out. Governance arrangements, certainly, and strengthening governance, that would be one a critical element of implementation. But that comparison with the United Kingdom and the United States is misleading and it's certainly not true.
All right, Letitia, thank you very much indeed for your wisdom and for your reflections this morning. Professor Letitia Rispel is a professor of public health at Wits University. I should note that the shares of not only Discovery, but other South African medical insurers slumped yesterday after the news that Cyril Ramaphosa, the President of the Republic, will sign into law the new health insurance bill later on this afternoon.